This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, How Did We Miss That? You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Here's a mistake that seems to happen often with innovation, not knowing your audience. Some visually impaired people use a cane to help them get around. It's usually white to make it super visible for others and to also signal that the user can't see. For more than 50 years, people have tried to re-engineer this cane to make it, quote, smart, to add more functions. There's the Ultra Cane, the K-Sonar, the C5 Laser Cane. Yet none of these have come close to replacing the standard white cane. Why not? Steph Yin looked into this.
Which way are we going to go, Kennedy?
Kennedy, Dowd, and Ethan are practicing their navigation skills.
All right, so we're going to take the covered path.
So think about where you are. Okay, think about where the door to exit is.
At the Overbrook School for the Blind in West Philadelphia, each student is paired with an orientation and mobility instructor who helps them learn the white cane. There are multiple ways to use a cane. Kennedy likes to sweep hers back and forth, maintaining constant contact with the ground. While Dowd and Ethan prefer a two-point touch, tapping left and right as they walk. It's a matter of personal preference, and the instructors work in whichever style each student wants. As we're walking, Ethan loses his bearings a bit. With the help of his instructor, Amanda, he thinks through where he is.
Hey, what cluster are you in?
The east cluster.
East cluster. So where's the library?
Down the ramp. Over to the left.
Over to the left. There you go.
Around the world, the white cane has become a symbol of self-reliance and dignity for people who are blind. But it has its limits.
Sometimes I have trouble getting around people or finding certain objects.
The cane can't detect obstacles that are far away. It leaves the upper body vulnerable to overhangs.
Tree branches are a serious thing for everybody here.
It can miss drop-offs, like curbs. It can get caught on things.
My cane gets a little bit stuck.
In the grass, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to use your cane in the grass. It gets stuck in those cracks, right?
Sometimes?
Yeah.
It does.
Maybe because of these challenges, only an estimated 2 to 8% of people who are visually impaired actually use white canes. The rest rely on other people, guide dogs, or their usable vision. About 85 to 90% of people who are blind or visually impaired have some low level of sight. The question is, could there be a better cane? One that more people want to use? For decades, inventors have tried to use whatever new tech is out there, sonar, ultrasound, GPS, artificial intelligence, to up the function of the plain white cane. Shlomi Hanasi knows all about that. He lives in Israel, and he's a bit of a mad inventor. About a decade ago, he was a student working in a lab on a device called the eye cane. It used infrared rays to detect obstacles within 5 meters and communicated with users through sound and vibrations. It was a promising technology. Previous devices were slow at detecting and communicating obstacles, but the eye cane...
It was fast enough, okay? So it was actually useful and was different from other instruments.
Shlomi's team also showed that it took blind people less time to learn how to use the eye cane than other devices. They got a lot of media coverage.
It worked very well. You can read a lot of articles that show that.
But good press aside, a lot of people who are blind are skeptical of technologies invented by sighted people like Shlomi. For instance, Daniel Kish. He doesn't see any need for a smart cane. Daniel lives in Southern California. He's been blind since he was a baby, when he had both of his eyes removed due to a rare eye cancer called retinoblastoma. But very early on, he found his own way of getting around.
I began clicking and using and developing my own form of sonar right after I lost my second eye.
Daniel started using echolocation, or sonar vision. He would make sounds, usually by clicking his tongue.
A quiet click might sound like this, but it can go quite loud.
Sometimes he'd also snap his fingers or clap his hands. And he'd listen to how the sound came back to him to get the texture, size, and shape of objects.
Then I got around pretty well. I walked to school myself. I got around my community myself.
Brain scans have found that when people like Daniel use echolocation in lieu of sight, they're actually using their visual cortex, the brain region that processes sensory information from our eyes.
It'll reconnect and rewire itself to wherever it needs to gather the data it needs.
In his late teens, Daniel wanted to do more stuff, so he learned how to use a cane, and that helped him even more. Echolocating helped him with objects at head and shoulder level, and the cane took care of what was at his feet.
And so my perceptual system became a kind of seamless dynamic. I've hiked the Swiss Alps with my cane, and I'm one of those who likes to hike alone.
A big part of his technique is allowing the cane to become an extension of oneself. Think of a rat's whiskers.
Rat's whiskers have certain qualities. They're very delicate, they're light, they're flexible, they're conductive. So we try to simulate that, if you will, with a cane. The lighter and more delicate the touch, the more information you're able to receive.
And that's one of Daniel's main gripes with smart canes. He says, the minute you start adding batteries, sensors, and buttons to a cane, you start interfering with all this.
One of the things that happens, of course, is you make the cane heavier. You change the balance of the cane.
Plus, Daniel says, all the sound and vibratory cues can be distracting. And electronics make a cane more difficult to maintain. You have to charge it. The tech can malfunction.
This thing is going to be susceptible to weather. It's going to be susceptible to dirt.
Not to mention, smart canes can cost hundreds of dollars more than a regular white cane. Most importantly, Daniel worries that fixating on electronics will shift focus away from building a good foundation in orientation and mobility. Just think about how over-relying on Google Maps has made all of us worse at getting around on our own. But there are other people, like Kirshat Ceylan, who want a better cane. Kirshat is from Turkey and has been blind since birth. And he thinks, why not use tech that's here to our advantage?
Do visually impaired people need improvement in their daily life? Yes, I do. At least I do.
Kirshat has worked on many different technologies for the visually impaired, including a media platform, a navigation tool for shopping centers, and an interface that provides audio descriptions for movies. His latest project is the WeWalk, a new smart cane. It ultrasonically detects overhead obstacles. It also integrates with a user's smartphone and syncs up with apps like Google Maps or Amazon's Alexa. He said the effort arose from his own needs. For example, Kirshat says when he's waiting at the bus stop, he's always asking other people to let him know when his bus, number 43, arrives.
And also, while we are walking in the street, we don't know the name of the stores or we don't know the color of the traffic lights. And these are the problems that we have to solve. Visually impaired people can be independent. We believe that.
Kirshat does acknowledge the points that some blind people make against smart canes.
We have to accept that smart canes are heavier than the regular canes, but we should focus on if the heavier cane give me much more confidence, much more ability to travel easier, then I can prefer the heavier cane.
Daniel Kish, the echolocator, says it's promising that more blind people are leading tech development. He says that makes a difference.
So historically, a lot of these technologies were developed by sighted people. You cannot understand blindness from a sighted perspective.
Daniel says the problem is sighted people can never fully grasp blind people's experiences.
They make, I'll call them guesses about not seeing.
And often what's fueling those guesses are stigma, fear, anxiety.
Most people are afraid of blindness. They feel it's among the top four worst things that could happen to them, right alongside of terminal illness, cancer and such. When you look at information that is presented around various technologies and devices, it very much emphasizes what the blind person cannot do or won't be able to do. So there is a very much kind of, we need to fix this mentality. I think that the whole perspective needs to be shifted from an assumption of deficit to an expectation of capacity.
Remember Shlomi Hanasi, the inventor in Israel who was working on the eye cane? He eventually learned this lesson in his own way. During the time he was working on the eye cane, he happened to come across a cat on the street during a run one day.
Because I was living in a village with a lot of jackals that came out at night, I thought it was a newborn jackal. So I gave it the name Zevon, which means wolfy.
Shlomi took Zevon home with him and soon realized the cat was blind. Since he was already working on the eye cane, he got to work making a wearable device that would detect obstacles for Zevon. But then,
as much as I wanted to help this cat with time, I saw that it can manage by itself and it have actually more skills than I will ever thought to have myself.
Zevon was fine staying home alone. He could expertly maneuver around the furniture.
He was able to jump everywhere.
The experience taught Shlomi a bigger lesson, that people who can see often miss the ways that the blind adapt and develop their own ways of being in this world.
Because we don't know how easy to be blind, we cannot understand usually the other senses so well.
He says this illustrates a broader problem with tech, that often developers try to create solutions for others based on assumptions without taking the time to understand people.
That story was reported by Steph Yin.